Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thrifters Villa, a podcast for resellers and entrepreneurs. I'm Daniela, and today I have an episode for you guys with one of our Patreon members, Jess, who has been on before talking about home goods. So she is here today with me, and we're going to be chatting about post-pandemic trends and behaviors, which I think is a really important conversation to have, especially since so many of us have noticed a big difference in our businesses, the way that buyers behave, the way that our businesses are behaving. So it's just a really great discussion on breaking that all down and kind of chatting about the realities of reselling. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode, and we will see you at the table. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode. I have Jess here with me. Jess has been on before talking about home goods. Hello, Jess.
Hi.
And today we have a different topic that we want to bring to you guys. And we are going to talk about post-pandemic trends and behaviors of buyers, of reselling, of just the way the world is today. And I think it's a great conversation to have as quarter one is rounding out, which is wild, but I think a lot of us have experienced many different emotions over the last year, year and a half, trying to adjust to the world of selling and how the secondhand market has really shifted and changed. And we were actually just talking about, you know, how big retailers are playing a role now in the secondhand market. And I think that's something that we all need to consider as well. But we are going to first start off with changes in buyer behavior, and because I think that's an important piece of reselling and understanding that. Disclaimer, I want to make sure I throw this out here. These are our opinions. So please don't take it like this is fact. It's not. It's just our opinions. And it may sound like it's a negative landscape for reselling, but it's not. It's just us being able to understand as sellers what's happening in the world. We have to be aware of this stuff. Retailers are aware of it. Jess works for a very large company, and they have to be aware of these things as well. So I don't know if you want to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, as far as my background goes, so I mean, I have an Etsy shop where I sell like vintage, like home decor, glassware, vintage clothing. It's called Upright Vintage. Full time I work in advertising sales at Google. So I work with a really large amount of different types of companies and business models, selling all sorts of products. And it's just, yeah, it's been interesting. I think a lot of what we see in reselling, it tends to be kind of like a microcosm of what I see in, you know, the trends of my full-time job and the companies that I work with, and what they're hearing, what they're seeing, and how they're trying to adjust and change things as well. So I think it all kind of like blends together, but it's useful to think about the different factors that could be impacting like how buyers are spending their time and their money now and what they have on their mind. As well as just like the overall reselling landscape, how that affects, I don't want to say competition, but, you know, just like what the landscape is like for other resellers, people getting into the game, getting out of the game, and how people are trying to kind of pivot, I think, within that.
Yeah. I mean, I can speak for myself, and I've said it plenty of times on here, but like when it comes to pivoting, I think I've pivoted more times than I can count in the last 2 years, and I'm still to this day figuring out creative ways or different ways to be seen, to have these items sell. A lot of times it comes down to just adjusting your price points and understanding that what you once had as your goal or what you once thought was going to work just doesn't anymore for various reasons. But it's up to you as a seller to take that step back and really make those analysis. There are people that get paid lots of money to run these analyses for big companies, and we are solopreneurs for most part. You know, we have our team of one or a team of a few, and we don't run on that such a big scale like an Amazon or a Walmart or, you know, a big retailer like that. So you have to take the time in your business to look at all this. But we came together. Well, I shouldn't say we. Jess really did it all. I'm just here for fun.
I'm just anal and put together an outline.
We decided to have this episode so we can kind of bring all this information to you guys to really make you think, you know, how the landscape has changed and how you can adjust or maybe just take into consideration when you're sourcing and putting things online. I think it goes without saying that inflation and the economy is rough right now all across the board. I think everyone is feeling it. I can say for a fact that big businesses are feeling it because we have layoffs happening all the time in companies and in establishments that we never thought that we would see it happen or happen as quickly as it is. I feel like the end of 2023 really started it for a lot of big box corporations, and it has just kind of continued in a waterfall effect across the map. You know, a lot of tech companies who may have hired more people during the pandemic have now really scaled back. And I think a lot of it has to do with the surplus of money that businesses and even us as just regular old citizens got, that money is dried up or is drying up. And now you need to really look at, you know, what can you afford for your business? And that plays with what people are buying. How often are people buying? So it all goes together.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I know, Jess, you had mentioned in here about like stimulus checks and tax refunds and all that. I'm curious about your perspective on it.
Well, I think the obvious thing, the obvious trend that we hear a lot from a lot of content out there is like, okay, yeah, people aren't like, first and foremost, people aren't stuck inside anymore like they were in pandemic times. Mm-hmm. They're not. Like, people are, of course, on their phones, but they're not, like, you know, chronically on their phones. They're not, you know, don't have stimulus checks. This year, a lot of people don't even have tax refunds. And a lot of people owe, actually. And then, you know, of course, inflation is high. Times are tough. So I think, like, that's, like, a really common, like, you know, observation. And that's all true. And so I think, like, some of these other things that we want to talk about are additional, like, trends and behaviors that could be in addition to like the obvious like inflation. So I think like, and of course, part of that too is like people are spending more money on traveling and experiences now that they can actually go out. I also think the average person is actually shopping more themselves at thrift stores and estate sales and antique malls and things like that. So they don't always need to buy everything online from mm-hmm. us. Like they, like I see so many people, I mean, not just at thrift stores, but like estate sales, I mean, they'll have lines of 100+ people before it even opens, before like an hour before it even opens. Like it's crazy. And those people aren't just resellers. Those are like the average person. They're retired people that just want something to do on a weekday. It's crazy. So like there's that. I use Bumble BFF sometimes to like, you know, make new lady friends. And like, it is crazy how many people I've noticed that like on their profile, they'll have, you know, as a hobby, they like to go thrifting. And I'm just like, you know, like that's a really interesting trend to me. And of course, like most of them tend to not be as like, you know, intense about it as I am maybe, but like the fact that the average person, like just, you know, who also enjoys something like brunch and The Bachelor is saying that they want to go thrifting is, I think, really interesting and frankly, a little bit mainstream. So I think there are more people that are kind of choosing to go out and do a little bit of the hunting themselves as opposed to just buying online. And then, yeah, I think it's just, I mean, the idea of secondhand shopping is more accessible. Like, I know I didn't even know what I had never gone to an estate sale before like 2020. Like, and I'm like in this, I mean, I don't know. I got like super into this world, of course, like during pandemic times, but like, I think there's just a lot more content out there now that exposes people to the ways that you can shop secondhand. Like a lot of people just like didn't know about this so much before. And now it's like very, I think more common to talk about it. It's cool. It's way more accessible to a lot of people. And it's just like a fun thing to do. So I think that is kind of something that we don't talk about that much. It's just how popular these things are. Like, I think a lot of people complain about like, oh yeah, eBay's dead. My sales are so dry. And it's like, well, it could be that someone who was your buyer is now like out at the estate sale next to you. Like that, right. That can be very real. And I even think, and we kind of talked about this on the last like Patreon like call that we had, but like, I think too, because estate sales are so popular now, there's less at the end of the day and at the end of the sale and the weekend to donate to a thrift store. Mm-hmm. So like typically in the past, you know, if you don't sell stuff at the estate sale, that might be donated. And now there's like a lot less to be donated because it gets cleared out if it's a good sale. So that could also contribute to what we see and complain about of like, oh, there's nothing good in the thrift stores and people complaining like resellers are buying it all up. And it's like, I think it's a lot more complex than that. I think there's like a full kind of supply chain issue that we're now facing of just the overall popularity of all these things contributes to there being, you know, less of some of these like cool, hot things that we want to find at the thrift store.
I also think that businesses have become smarter, right? Kind of referencing what I said before, and they have buyback programs. Like really, what I would say brands that used to be sought after that were easier for us to sell more, I guess, of those bread and butter modern pieces like a Patagonia, a North Face, REI, all that kind of stuff, the outdoorsy stuff, they have buyback programs. And if you're a loyal Patagonia North Face person, you're going to use that buyback program because they're going to give you credit. Now the brand itself is going to either reuse, recycle, or sell it and make a profit on an item that they already sold, right? And they're going to give you a credit of however they decide to give the credit. And let's say your whole family wears Patagonia jackets, and this is your way to get your kids new Patagonia jackets. You do this buyback program, and now you're able to buy your children a new Patagonia jacket every however many years. Like, not only are the brands are getting smarter about it, but now buyers are getting smarter and saying, well, I mean, I could buy one pre-loved on a reselling platform, or I can just take what I have and send it in, get a credit, and be able to buy something brand new for myself or someone in my family. So I think there's a lot of changes in the landscape that did not exist before, but everyone sees the benefit of secondhand and everyone sees the benefit of getting into the pre-loved market. And that has just changed things. And I mean, it's smart as a big business like a Patagonia to do that. That's really smart. You know, it's, and even Coach does. I mean, Coach is like a whole program where they recycle. Like, let's say you have a bag that's just, it's torn or it's still a good bag, but like it needs a lot of love. They give it to artists. And now they get to design these brand new bags and they sell it at such a premium, like anywhere from $700 to $1,000 for these bags that are recreated. And it's just very interesting to see it all change.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. I mean, yeah, the fact that they're able to leverage their own brand name to like charge those prices. Like if the average reseller were to just upcycle, you know, a Coach bag and draw on it, like maybe if they had a super strong social media following, they could charge those dollars. But otherwise, if you try to just like paint on a Coach bag and sell that on Poshmark, like you're not getting $700. Like, who are you? So it's smart. It is really smart. And brands are trying to really capitalize on this trend of secondhand and almost like, I mean, you know, you could call it greenwashing in a sense of like brands trying to also be like, look at us. We're so sustainable. We're, you know, we're taking back our products and fixing them up or upcycling them or whatever. But I guess at the end of the day, that is helping to, you know, have there be less in landfills and, you know, reach people and get people buying secondhand and used.
There's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah.
But I do think that overall, what we knew before the pandemic versus what happened in the pandemic versus what's happening now, like you have to look at it on a continuum, and it's going to continue to change as the years progress. And as people get savvier, you know, when times get tough, people get really savvy on how they're going to acquire things that they need. We do it. And why can't the average person do it too? Now that the information is just so accessible to them, all they have to do is YouTube, go on TikTok or Instagram, and all the information's there for them. It wasn't that easy before, but now, why not? So one of the things we want to do is kind of break down different categories that maybe have seen a change over the last few years. And the first one that we have on here is home goods and kitchenware. So I will have Jess take that.
Yeah, for sure. So, and I think kind of like just speaking to some of the trends on home goods and how that might be changing and how I suspect maybe what's going into that. Like, I think, so in pandemic times, like, I think people were kind of like, you know, everyone's trapped at home, isolated socially, and kind of like fulfilling a little bit of fantasy in buying things for their kitchen, for hosting, for entertaining, for, you know, the days where they could have, you know, people over again. And so we saw definitely really strong, you know, buying for, you know, glassware and all sorts of kitchen things and table linens, like really all sorts of things for the home and the kitchen, which makes a lot of sense. I think now, I think, and people are still buying some of those things, but I also think it's not slowed down, but it's not as, it's a little bit more realistic now because I think like in pandemic times, like, you know, you're kind of buying for this idea of the future, but like you don't actually, but like then once the day comes where you actually can buy a house and have people over again, it's like, wait, I actually don't need 10 sets of glassware. I don't actually need like 20 different tablecloths or whatever, you know, something crazy. But like, so there almost has to be like a little bit of a limit to the amount of like collecting that you can do for some of these things. So I feel like that might be happening. And I also think like just thinking about, I guess, like life stages that people are in and like who is our buyer. Like, I don't know, I guess I'm largely thinking about millennials just because I am a millennial and I'm surrounded by a lot of millennials, whether they are like elder millennials or younger or whatever, right in the middle. But there's a lot of people that are buying houses and have been buying houses, you know, during pandemic times, after pandemic times, still buying. And like, yeah, it's really hard to buy a house in a lot of markets, but it's still being done. It's absolutely achievable in some.
I don't know how, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, you bought a house. I bought a house.
In like, 2021, not in 2024.
Okay. Well, I bought a house in 2022, but people are still doing it. I mean, I like it's still happening.
I couldn't do it today though.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think that, and yet people find a way. Like people like buy, like houses are still being bought. And with that, I think like just thinking about the logistics of what it means to buy a house and move, it means like, okay, well, people need to actually save their money to buy a house and all the expenses that come along with closing on a house, moving into the house, fixing up the house. That becomes a new priority and not as much, you know, buying other things. Like, yeah, maybe once they move in, they can decorate if they need to, but like, you really have to like cut down on your extra spending if you're trying really hard to save for a house. And also you don't actually want to move as much like stuff as you, you know, you want to minimize how much you're moving. So I think like that, if that is like a part of the stage of life that people are in, then that could definitely be impacting, you know, buyer behavior as well for home decor and things like that. Especially because like if you're renting, then you could be moving, you know, every year, every other year. You might be selling your stuff when you rent and you have to move because you don't want to move it, or you're moving to a city far away. So like, I think that like if people are selling their stuff and then buying back, you know, new stuff whenever they move, if they're moving with more frequency, that lends itself to like, okay, they need to buy and they want to maybe buy secondhand. They want to buy vintage. They want to buy, you know, something cheap from other people selling. So that kind of lends itself to like, okay, fueling the secondhand market. But if people are, you know, trying to buy houses and stay put for a while, you kind of, you know, yeah, you're building your decor as time goes on, but like eventually you kind of reach a point where you're like, yeah, I actually, my living room looks pretty good as it is. I don't have room for more furniture. I don't need more stuff. I don't have more wall space. I'm like, you know, I'm kind of reaching that point myself. And I'm like, I've never been in this situation where I simply just like don't have more wall space. And I'm not really in a position to like be moving anytime soon. Yeah. So I think that's contributing too. So I would say like thinking more specifically about like some of the objects and trends that I noted, when I just think of like, you know, in my own shop as well as kind of polling, I think like some of the other resellers that I know and you know, trends that I'm kind of hearing on different podcasts for resellers and things like that. Like, I've definitely noticed a slowdown in kind of this more boho, like rattan and like bamboo wicker furniture type of aesthetic. Like, I think it still is cool. I still have, you know, some rattan pieces of furniture in my house, but I definitely think it's not nearly as hot as it was before. And the prices that you can get for it are not what they were. You know, peacock chairs were super hot during pandemic times. And now, like, I can't even tell you the last time I saw a peacock chair, like, anywhere. And it's, they're not on, like,
I saw one 2 weeks ago at my maternity photo shoot, but that doesn't count.
Okay. That's okay. No, and I don't think they're out. I just think that people aren't being as, like, kind of, like, irrationally fanatical about them. Like, that's the thing is, like, in pandemic times, I just remember, you know, like, it was just so, like, frenzied. It just felt, like, very chaotic when things were hot. So I think that is, like, one of those things. And I think I've noticed colored pressed glass is not as popular. So I would say glassware is still popular. Colored glassware is still popular. Certain other styles of, like, you know, designers like Fred Press and, you know, some of these other vintage ones with, like, that typically have maybe some 22 karat gold on there. Like, those are still popular. Scandinavian styles and shapes are still popular. Smoky colors. But, like, I'm referring to more so kind of like those, like, chunky looking, like, chunky shaped goblets. And they're, you know, typically more vibrant colors. I feel like a lot of people had, you know, they use them maybe for wedding glassware or mismatched eclectic, you know, displays and stuff like that. And, like, it still looks cool, but I'm not really seeing those fly off the shelves. And I think, you know, other sellers aren't as well, because those are also more common. Like, those are a little bit more, they were more commonly produced and they're a bit more common to find. So I think people are either thrifting for those themselves and finding it, or they're a little bit, like, over it, and they've already kind of assembled their collection and they don't really need to buy more of that. Right. And then I think, so I'm hearing one of my friends said cheese domes has not been selling as much as they were. I'm not a cheese person, so I never really got into that. But, you know, I see cheese domes and, like, you know, things like that all the time at the thrift, and it'll be maybe like a nice teak board and, like, a glass dome that covers it. That kind of thing. So I think maybe people have bought, you know, in pandemic times, they bought all the cheese domes and charcuterie boards they need, and they don't need more. Yeah. And then I think, like, I've heard grand millennial style is a little bit, not as, you know, well, some elements are still hot, but I think, you know, some elements are a bit slower. Like, I've heard, one of my friends normally sells a lot of ginger jars, which are kind of like ceramic jars with, like, a little cap that goes on it. And they'll, you know, maybe have what, like, kind of more like Asian style design sometimes. So if those have sold down, brass still sells, but I think it sounds like it's also a bit, you know, people are a little price conscious about it. So it kind of just depends on the brass piece itself and what it is exactly and how you're pricing it. And then when it comes to, like, I would say 80s stuff, like, I feel like during pandemic times, I was seeing some popularity with, like, kind of like 80s to 30s style, like, art deco, like, vases, where it's kind of like almost like a shell kind of design and shape, and some of those, like, very 80s colors. I don't really see those, like, you know, selling so much now. And then, so Yaffa organizers was a big, big thing in the pandemic. I sold, like, 3 or 4 of those. Those are, like, these plastic, kind of like grid, modular type of, like, you know, you can hang them on the wall, like, and they hold, like, paper or things, magazines, whatever. Also sold, like, a Yaffa, like, coat rack, but it's just kind of like plastic. So, like, kind of like this trend for acrylic. And I think, like, acrylic and Lucite is definitely still in, and people are still buying some of these things, but they're not buying them for the prices that they were, that I could sell them at before. Like, I was selling Yaffa organizers for over $100. Wow. This is a plastic, a plastic grid thing that you hold some, like, magazines in, you know? Right. So yeah, so I think they still sell, but there's just more online, because people noted the trends and there's more, it's a bit more saturated. And then, like, there's not as much of, like, this, like, crazy, like, frenzy to be buying you know, these things for such high prices.
I did want to make a comment about the brass and everything. Like when you go on different websites, whether it be like an Anthropology or even like a Home Depot and stuff, and they highlight these different things, they do tend to highlight like, you know, brass towel rings or like a wall sconce that's brass, right? Like so using brass as more of like an accent piece mm-hmm. with maybe a colorful wallpaper, whatever, right? But what I think is happening is you have these other brands or companies, I should say, like a TJ Maxx, like a Marshalls, like a Burlington, that have these dupes, essentially, of what these other brands are showing at a more affordable price point, that sometimes it doesn't even make sense to buy the vintage one or the or buy it secondhand because I can get the same thing for $10 or whatever, or $20. Same thing goes to the boards. You can go walk into TJ Maxx and look at how many boards that they have that you can buy, and some are pretty affordable and they're decent boards. So it's like, it makes it harder as someone who sells home goods to compete with a company like TJ Maxx, who can easily recreate something at a much
higher price point. Totally. I would also say it sometimes makes it hard to, increasingly hard to source, because like you'll see stuff at the thrift store. Yep. I mean, and which tells you just how fast the trend cycles are, where like these stores are creating, like they're recreating vintage looks for lamps, for vases, for like all sorts of things. And then it's already ending up at the thrift. And then you're like, I can't really tell if this is true vintage sometimes, because it looks like it's obviously based off of a very specific like designer look. And it's just, you can't, but like it's taking that and it's just, you know, making it for the masses. So yeah, it's definitely like, I would say kind of polluting like the inventory stream that we have at the thrift store.
Yeah. Agreed. Sports cards. Very interesting that you're mentioning sports cards.
Yeah. So, okay. So I don't sell sports cards at all.
I know my brother, nothing about this.
My brother did. So my brother, and he still does a little bit, but like he had an eBay shop when I had my Etsy shop during pandemic times, and sports cards were so hot. It was very speculative. Right. It was like gambling. It was like, I mean, truly, when I say speculation, like some things were selling for thousands of dollars. I mean, some things still do, but like, it was just really crazy behavior. And, you know, he would get, you know, cards graded. It would take months to even get the cards back because the graders were so backed up in how many people were trying to send in cards to be graded. It would, you know, it costs a lot of money to get things graded, but you know, but like theoretically you can, if you get a good grade, then that is worth it because now it's worth thousands of dollars, not hundreds of dollars. So I just kind of more know about this industry a bit more secondhand through him, because he, was selling on that very heavily. And I think that was due to, you know, people, there weren't any sports games going on, you know, like there weren't, you know, people couldn't attend sports events, people couldn't play sports, people couldn't, you know, there wasn't anything new happening there. So I think a lot of people, especially men, were, you know, pouring themselves into collectibles such as sports cards and, you know, Funko Pops and like Hot Wheels and certain other things that I would say some of that is still hot today. But like, it's just not nearly as like volatile as it was during those times. So I know my brother like still, you know, dabbles in that and has his own kind of collections. But like it's also really slowed down. And at times he's been like, well, I guess I should sell this while I still can. You know, like it's, you know, it's almost like your investment might be a bit of a sunk cost for some of those things because of the way it's almost like some elements of the t-shirt market seems very similar, which I'm not about to dabble in t-shirts anytime soon either. But it just seems very similar, whereas sometimes it's like, what do you mean this sold for hundreds or thousands of dollars? That's crazy.
Yeah. There were Netflix shows and just shows in general that were created during the pandemic related to sports cards. And like people got like spinoff shows, or they were like YouTube channels, and this is all they did. They just unboxed various cards and showed their worth, and then would sell it live to people. Like crazy, crazy things when it came to cards.
Yeah, totally. And I'm, I don't know. And so, yeah, some of that is still like worthwhile, but I don't know. Like the first thing about
it would
like,
have to be a very specific sports card. Like,
yeah. And really good condition. Yeah, really. It's pretty crazy. So it requires a lot of niche knowledge, I think, mm-hmm. to do well in that industry or that category, I should say.
Yeah. Not a category that I ever plan on getting into. Same yeah. with t-shirts. People who like dabble in it and like have fun with them, like that's cool. I have no interest. I could care less about a t-shirt.
I'm yeah, fine. Totally. I know. I don't even wear t-shirts. Like I have boobs.
This is as close to a t-shirt that I get. You guys can't see it, but it's just like an Old Navy top.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like I can't even tell you the last time I wore an actual t-shirt in public I wear t-shirts like to bed, but I'm not. Saying? Yeah. Like I'm not about to like just, I don't know. It's just not, I just feel like it's not flattering on me personally. So I don't wear them, but
it has to be a V-neck. That's the only type I'll wear. Can't be crew neck. Doesn't look good on me.
Yeah.
We already touched on this, but people are just spending more money on traveling and experiences. But I think those experiences also encompass what we're going to go into next, which is just people shopping for themselves in different ways. That's an experience. I know lots of people in this. I talk to people all the time that I work with. They can't stand online shopping. Now, like, yes, it's convenient, but the amount of times you're returning something, the amount of times mm-hmm. that you are dissatisfied with the quality of an item, it's not worth it sometimes, especially when you're shopping for specific pieces for yourself, or if you're trying to build a certain type of wardrobe for yourself. So people want to experience going into a mall, outdoor, indoor mall, whatever it is, going into a store, having the store experience and touching items and seeing it in real life. And there's just something special, maybe because it's just my millennial heart, but like there's just something special about walking into a store and like seeing the colors and seeing the way the store has merchandised these pieces and understanding the way that they put certain outfits together, and like it all comes to life in a different way that, okay, yeah, I can see it online, but to me, it's a model online that's wearing it. But when you're in the store, you can conceptualize things a little bit differently, and then you can be a little more creative in the way that you want to create an outfit. Or the other reason I love to go in there for market research, sometimes I'm not going in to shop for myself. I'm just going to see what's new. And then you take those ideas from the retailers and then you go to their store or consignment store, and then you're buying similar pieces to create what you saw in an Anthropology, for example, because Anthropology really is Anthropology, Free People is probably two of the best stores to go in to get inspiration from because of how well they market to their audience. Mm-hmm. There's other brands that Gap does a good job too, and so does Madewell. But like, there's just something special that a brand like Anthropology brings that no matter who you are, when you walk in there, you get sucked in. And if you like to do market research and just twirl around these stores like I do, like that's probably one of my favorite ones. You can go into a designer store as well and it'll be a completely different experience, but I don't put myself in those situations.
Yeah, I know. I think I feel like for a time there was kind of a period, of course, where like, you know, the mall was king. Like that was all we had. That was 80s, mm-hmm. 90s. You hang out at the mall, whatever. That's what you do. And then, of course, with the internet, there was a period where it's like, okay, people suspect the mall is dead. No one wants to shop, go to a physical space if they don't have to. I do think like, I mean, some elements of like pandemic times, I would say like, I think created a little bit of anxiety that remains about like crowds and crowded places. Like I still don't really enjoy being in a very, very crowded, like, I don't even like going, like, I don't like going to Target anymore. I hate to say it, but I don't like going to like grocery Target. Shopping yeah. during any like main time. Costco is an absolute nightmare for me. And I just don't like the crowds, but I do think that there is a really nice beauty to the experiential element of a well-merchandised store. And just like you said, like if it's like chaotic, whatever, like that can be fun when it's like a thrift store and you know that that's what it's going to look like and you are prepared for that because you like that. But like there is really something so elevated about the merchandising and like truly the art that goes into the mm-hmm. displays that they create for in the storefronts and window displays that like Anthropology creates. I mean, the major fashion, you know, brands, like if you're walking in Europe or in New York, or like the major cities, and like those storefronts and those windows look gorgeous. And there is something really magical to that. Not just for clothes, but like, you know, even there are certain, yeah. And like, so there's certain, like, I would say, you know, kind of vintage shops. I don't want to call them antique stores, because like antique stores and antique malls are kind of like still in that really crowded, chaotic, like treasure hunting vibe. But like, I would say vintage stores typically are a bit more curated. And there are some that are able to charge really high prices because they do such a good job curating a scene that like is a full on, it's like IKEA, like it's like a full on room, and you can see how it all works together. And it's so gorgeous. And it's like stepping back in time. And you just want it all. And so that is, I think, like, there's definitely magic to that. And I've, you know, I've spent some money on some things in a store like that, that like, yeah, within reason, but it's also higher than I would probably typically pay if I didn't see it in that setting.
Right. Yeah. I think about, you brought up vintage stores and in Europe and stuff. The vintage stores in Europe are so different than the vintage stores that we have here in the US. They really treat their vintage stores, from videos that I've seen, I've never gone into one, but I don't think the UK, the streets are lined with vintage stores. It's like just, it's, or consignment stores. And the way that they do it, it's such an experience. And it's like a retail store mixed with a thrift store, but they do it in a way that no matter where you turn, there's something for you to look at. And it is, like you said, it's truly an art, because if you want to capture a buyer, when there's a million things going on in the buyer's head and on social media on their phone, how are you going to capture someone to purchase this item in your physical location that they're not going to get captured by online, or they're not going to be tempted to then scroll online and see how much this exact piece can cost elsewhere? Like, can I get this cheaper on Amazon? Because I've witnessed people doing it all the time. They're in a store, they're on their phone, they're looking on Amazon, they're looking at whatever it is on their phone to see, can I get this exact same thing? Maybe not the same brand, but the same style, cheaper somewhere else.
Yeah.
You have to be creative in that aspect to sustain today's world. Rent is not cheap. All the things that come with having a business is not cheap. Acquiring this inventory is not cheap. So how can you get the price point that you need, get the buyers that you want in your store, get them to want to come back and spend more, right? Like, these are all things to think about. And that's a physical retailer. But then I think about us, smaller sellers, right? How can we do that and capture buyers? Because if we don't think for a second that they're not doing the exact same thing while they're looking at our item on Etsy, Poshmark, eBay, I don't care where they are, you don't think they're taking your item and then going on Amazon or going on Walmart or whatever and searching for that exact same thing or something similar for less than what you have it priced for, or they sent you an offer for what they think it's worth because of what they saw online. It's happening every second.
Yeah, totally. And I think, and it's interesting because I think like certain platforms for reselling lend themselves better to creating more of a storefront and like a shop and a brand and a vibe than others. Like, I feel, even though, like, yeah, sometimes I try to browse on eBay, like, I cannot for the life of me, like, go through someone's store on eBay. And I say that in air quotations. Like, yeah. I'm sorry if you think that you have a storefront on eBay, you don't. Like, it's really, really disorganized as a buyer. And I'm a deliberate buyer where I'm a seller myself, and I'm trying to go through your storefront and find something similar because I liked one thing, and I'm trying to see like, oh, you must have other similar things, right? But you have like thousands of items and they're not really organized in a very clear way. And eBay doesn't really make it easy to sift through that. And like, I'm sorry, the user experience is still pretty archaic. It hasn't changed that much since eBay like first came out in like the late 90s. So I think, whereas like, you know, I like to sell on Etsy because I do think it's a very like curated aesthetic experience, and you can really lean into that if you want to, and you can really, you know, make the most of that if you want to have a very specific like aesthetic for what you sell, and you can have return buyers that know that this is like what you sell. And I think there's a lot of, it makes it more fun too, personally, as a seller to like, to think about that and to work on that. So that's just kind of, that's kind of what I like about that platform as opposed to some of the other ones. Even Poshmark, I think, can be a little difficult to actually really navigate through someone's closet and find, you know, other similar things from what I'm looking for when people have so many like thousands or hundreds of items listed. So I think, I don't know, it's just, so that's something to think about too, of like how you want to curate your online presence in your storefront outside of course, like there's Instagram, there's social media where you can have a bit more control over that and, you know, make that look all pretty if you have the time and you like putting energy into that. But then like, if you're actually just like on a marketplace and relying more on SEO and, you know, trying to bring people into your shop that way and want them to continue browsing once they get there, you know, how are you going about that?
Yeah. And maybe it was easier, we'll say 4 years ago, 5 years ago, to keep people on a Poshmark, we'll say. There's just too much now. Like they're on and off and they're going to all different places. And I don't know. It's out of our control because this is not our website. We don't own any of this. We borrow space from them. We pay them the 20, 30, 40%, whatever it is, to house space. And I don't know if there's an answer that's helpful to sellers to get the buyer to stay. I don't know what that looks like besides like what you said, doing the content creation, creating a space for yourself on a social media platform where now you're engaging with them in a different way. And I think this is where live sales kind of come into play, where you can build an audience base based off of your live selling and, you know, getting people to trust you that way. But that also only gets you so far. So I don't know. I think a lot of it, if you want to continue to grow and reach different audiences, you kind of have to get into that TikTok, Instagram reel kind of thing, whether you want to or not.
I know. I hate to say it because I don't really engage with that.
Like, you're the Google girl. Like, this is what people look for.
Yeah. I mean, like, people are online. Yeah, thinking about different ways to reach people is great. I just like, I don't know, I just don't have the energy for social media or time. So I'm very resistant to getting into that, but I know that I'm being unreasonable about it because I know that it can be so successful for sellers to like, you know, curate their audience on Instagram, on TikTok, like all these things, live selling. The idea of it is just so exhausting to me because I have a part-time shop. Like I mean, I work on it. I try to work on it every day, but like I also have a full-time job that's very demanding and I have hobbies and interests outside of both my full-time and part-time jobs, you know? So like, it's just hard to fit in even more and I can only do so much. And, you know, I've had to really give myself grace, in recent years of just like, I literally can only do so much or I'm going to go crazy. So, you have to draw the line somewhere, but I do really think, you know, that community curation and like finding ways to make it clear what your aesthetic is and like what kind of products you offer is a really smart way to build up your funnel of, you know, people buying from you.
I also think niching, but not niching so much that you have pigeonholed yourself and that it's hard for you to branch out, but getting a good grip on what it is that works for you, what your buyer looks like, really understanding the dynamics of that, kind of doing a behavioral analysis, I guess, of who your buyer is and what it is that people typically purchase from you. I think if you understand that, it helps draw in more of those people to come to your shop. And then customers that are satisfied with their purchase with you generally do come back or will check your shop often to see if you have that, you know, a similar piece or something else that they're looking for. It's a great way to build a relationship without actually having to do that engagement. And I think as the years have gone on for me, and I'm sure others who have been reselling for a while, you start to like take all those layers away that you once had and you find what really works for you. And sometimes that means only selling two categories. Maybe it means only selling one. Maybe it means you have, I don't know, created a store where someone can easily grab a bunch of pieces and make various outfits for everyday life or work, or a mom who just doesn't have the time to go and to a store and buy things for herself, but she knows she can come to you, she can get a good deal, she can get the brands that she wants, and you have these quote unquote trending pieces that people are looking for right now. So there's a lot of ways to look into it. And I think for me, I'm trying to eliminate more and more categories that, yes, they may bring in money on occasion, or they're good like filler items, because I think it's important to have some filler items. But the way that I look at filler items is definitely different now than what I did even last year. And I think it's streamlining things and kind of, I guess as a seller, I realize the importance of streamlining my process, not only on how I do things, but on how I sell things and why I sell things, so that I know that even if I don't put the work in for 2 or 3 weeks, it's okay, because I'm still going to have a buyers coming to me. And I think that's kind of the mentality that I've had to build for myself over the last year and a half. And it's a mentality that I'm going to carry over into all of this year as well, is okay, I'm not sourcing or I'm not listing every day, but I'm still making sales and still sustaining the amount that I need to make for whatever your goals are, right? Solely based off of me understanding my business and the buyers that I want. And I think that's critical in today's world.
Yeah. I mean, it's such, I mean, I totally agree with everything you just said. And it's also like, it's always such a fine line between like, okay, when do I need to be like niching down and staying mm-hmm. in my lane and cutting out, you know, areas that aren't profitable or, you know, just don't make sense and sticking to higher dollar items? And when should I be actually diversifying and pivoting and trying new categories and adding in filler products that don't have to be over $100, you know, like, or over $50, whatever. So like, it's just, it's always such a, I think like, you know, sometimes you're going in circles of like, okay, which direction should I be going in right now? Cause like, I think what you just described is a lot of what I was kind of focusing on like last year. And now I feel like it might be time for me to be adding in testing out some other categories that I've been wanting to, you know, been wanting to do, but I haven't been putting the time into it, or like find like other ways to list things. So for example, like I want to be listing more books, and when it comes to like other ways to list things, like maybe having more bundles and more, you know, groups of things that go together, or variations of things, as opposed to just like one single listing for everything, which is just so much work. And that could like having bundles of like, for example, like bud vases or something. Like I have a ton of those and they're pretty small. So like, what if I, you know, group three of those together and sell it that way, I can charge a higher price and get rid of more inventory at once. So like that's smart. So I think I want to be testing out some of those things. And like, you know, it's just kind of, or like, yeah, adding in books. It's like, yeah, some of those are, you know, you can charge a higher price for them, but some of them might be less than $30. And so like, that's new for me to have, you know, I don't normally have like less expensive items in my shop simply because I don't have the time to list so many things and be shipping so many things that I can't operate on a high volume model. So like, I've been prioritizing things that I can list for a higher dollar amount, but I think it's smart to have other types of things in your shop that can bring people there. And maybe people see all of your cool stuff and they like it, but they can't pay that. And so they'll settle. I don't want to say settle, but they'll be like, okay, this is a cool book and it's $30 and I can stomach that today. Right. So like, I think, those are kind of some ways that I'm probably going to try to diversify with my shop soon and just test some waters and see how it goes.
You said the whole $30 book and I can stomach that. I don't know why, but it made my brain go to like these fancy coffee shops that are popping up all over the place. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'll gladly pay $12 for this fancy coffee and $5 for a croissant that resembles something from Europe just so that I can experience it. Like, I don't know why that popped into my head, but like, that's the content that I feel like is being pushed lately. Like all these little, even restaurants, they're coming up with very unique ways to get people to come out to their spot to try, even though they're going to be spending more money, all based off of the experience.
Totally. I am such a sucker for expensive pastries. I easily spend at least like $8 on a pastry, and I'm just like, all right, take my money. I will have four of these.
I will gladly pay this.
Yeah.
I don't care what's in it. I'm going to pay it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
you know,
there, and, but again, this goes back to like content creation. They're really good at it. That's yeah. what's the sin.
Yeah. Well, that, and also the thing is the juice needs to be worth the squeeze. So like yeah. if it's a bad, if it's actually, if you have it and then the pastry isn't even good, I'm like, okay, well then I tried it and I'm not coming back here. So like,
right.
I do think that has to go back to like what we're talking about too, of like the products that you sell mm-hmm. do need to be good. Like if you're going to mm-hmm. charge prices, higher prices for them, you need to be, you know, finding cool stuff that people want. And it's unique. And like, especially in the vintage world, like you do need to be finding those hot items and like, you know, collectibles, and the condition matters and the description matters and the customer experience matters and the photography matters. Like, I cannot say this enough, but like, that's my other gripe with a lot of other platforms is like the photography is so bad. And it's not just like, I'm not expecting people to be a professional photographer. I'm expecting you to have it be photograph the item in various angles and like show flaws and have the lighting be, have it be not blurry, have it be like clear that I can see the lighting at all or the item at all in the lighting. It's just crazy to me. And I'm just like, how are you able to get away with this? It's so bad.
I know.
I don't know.
I know. I think it's just that reseller mentality of just get it up and listed, like yeah. it doesn't matter, it will sell. But I that doesn't translate to every platform. It doesn't translate to getting a certain price point that you may want for a piece. So maybe it comes down to what it is that you sell. Like if you're selling t-shirts, if it's not like a crazy collectible t-shirt, I guess it doesn't matter, so someone will buy it, I guess. But like if you're selling, that's like if you're selling a luxury piece and you're not going to take good photos of it, you're not going to brighten the photos, you're not going to like do all the things to it, well, no, you're never going to get the price tag that you want on it because people aren't going to trust it.
Yeah, totally. And like, I am a collector of things, you know, I want to be buying stuff. But like, I just can't trust a seller that like can't put time into simply photographing their item and like what the measurements are. It just drives me crazy.
Right. Well, speaking of sellers, do you think that there are more resellers out there and that's causing the problem? Or do you think it's just a whole host of things that are happening?
I definitely think it's a whole host of things. And I think it's really common for people to blame the fact that there are more resellers and it's more saturated. And I do think there are more resellers. I do think that's real. And I think there's a lot of people complaining and like threatening to quit and like get out of the game. And there's some people returning to, you know, their everyday life and their jobs and, you know, getting out of the game. But I think most people are at least staying in it, even if they have to slow down with it and or go part time with it or whatever. Like, I know I've definitely had to slow down with my shop since, you know, returning to office and all these things, but like, I'm still going. I'm not about to stop entirely. It's too fun. So I think, I mean, we all have a shopping addiction anyway. So I don't think anyone's about to stop like reselling. I think it's just more and more people are actually like trying to get into it. But I don't think that's like the one and only like reason that we are kind of like in the environment that we're in currently. I just think that's like an easy thing for other resellers to blame. And I also think that's like another easy thing that like just regular thrifters are blaming at the thrift store. Like, oh my God, it's all the resellers taking all the good stuff. And like, there are some resellers that have poor etiquette and are hogging a lot of stuff at like a thrift store or an estate sale. Like, I went to an estate sale the other day that this lady was, and it was like the last day of the sale. I didn't get there like when it started. I was kind of an impromptu, you know, decided to go to it, whatever, just something to do with my brother in town. And this lady had like literally taken hundreds of clothing pieces and threw them on the bed and was like, these are mine and I'm going to go through them. It's going to take me several hours. I'm going through these for a friend who has a retail shop in LA. And you can have, you know, my rejects when I go through them. And it's like, lady, fuck off.
How this works.
I'm not going to wait around for hours while to like go through your rejects. Get a life. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, it was honestly like really, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And I can't, you know, and it's like, I get it. I'm a reseller. Like, but I just felt like going about it that way was really, like, that's the kind of behavior that makes people not like resellers. And so I just don't feel like that was a, I didn't like that. And I do think some people are kind of similar at the thrift store where they, you know, are piling on everything they can find in their cart and then they're going to go through it, you know, in a corner somewhere and take hours and then like whatever. And, you know, we all have to go through our stuff that we find. And like, yes, it's better to like grab stuff and decide later than to like regret it and see it in someone else's cart sometimes. But like, I don't know. I just feel like there's polite ways to go about it and, you know, ways where you're just not rubbing people the wrong way. But, you know, I also am a Midwestern girl and I'm just kind of like, why can't we all be friends? And why can't we all just be nice to each other and be fair? So maybe it's not realistic, but yeah, so I don't know. I do think there's more resellers, but I don't think that that's like the main, I don't think that's like the only issue or even like maybe the main issue that we're kind of coming across right now.
I think the only time the more reseller excuse works is if you're selling very common brands that people can kind of find everywhere and you're in that quantity model instead of a quality model, then yes, I do think the surplus of resellers will affect you because you've got way more competition. And this is where, you know, all the discussions that we had where it's niching or finding different ways to sell the item and presenting it a certain way and the content, all that, that's where all that comes into play. Because if you're selling everyday brands that are easy for someone else who's just getting started to sell and your price points are very similar, the buyer has way too many options. And it's just luck of the draw that yours sells. That's basically what it comes down to. So I think in that capacity, yes, that having more sellers makes it difficult. But this is where you as a business owner, because these are businesses, like, yes, it can be a hobby for some people, but it's a business. You pay taxes on it. It's a business. You need to really focus and run your own analysis on it and figure out what's worth it and what's not worth it. So like I've gotten rid of a lot of those more common brands that I would sell before that I just don't anymore. And that, yeah, okay, maybe a cute piece, but there's so much of it out there. Like, I don't want to be in that pool. I want to be in the pool of like a select few and then someone, you know, I have the right size and the right color or whatever it is. I'd rather be in that camp than in the, there's 5,000 other people selling this exact same piece and the prices range from $10 to $30. Well, they're going to pick the $10 one over my $30 one, you know? So I think there's some of that, that plays into it, but I agree with you. It's numerous things that go into it.
Definitely. And I think like at the end of the day, like you, when you're sourcing, like you still need to have taste. Like you still need to have, be the one that has an eye for what's cool and like be able to identify like that diamond in the rough that like, you know, any new reseller or whatever, like rushed over and didn't see, or be able to tell like, okay, the quality of this skirt is really, I can tell that this is silk by feeling it. And, you know, like, yeah, it doesn't have a label on it, but I can tell that this is a vintage skirt by the construction. I can tell that this is a quality skirt by the materials and the things like that, that like someone who is just relying on Google Lens might not be able to very easily like pick up. But you've developed the knowledge base to pick that up, and you like did the work to find that. And that's, I mean, theoretically, that's why we deserve to charge high prices if you feel that way, because it's like, okay, well, if you think you have a skill set and you're doing people a service by like finding this item and putting it online and charging money for it, then like, yeah, where is that skill set coming from? It's not, it can't just be Google Lens. It can't only be that.
And so that's what sets you apart. You literally have the knowledge and the skill base to back up what it is that you're selling. And the buyer will gain the trust that way because they can tell that you have the knowledge for it. When they ask a question, you have the answer that's exactly what they're looking for. It's correct. It's accurate. It's thorough. You have the photos to prove, or you've got authenticity to prove that this is what it is. You know, there's something to be said about taking the time to build your skill set and not just focus on throwing things up, and then hopefully something sticks.
Yeah, totally. And we all make mistakes, you know. Oh, yeah. Like
This didn't happen overnight.
Yeah, like I'm still, you know, picking stuff up that I'm like, damn it, I probably should have passed on that. But I'm also still like regretting not picking certain stuff up. So like it still happens years into it. But I'm also, I would say I've really refined my skill set of like knowing when to leave things behind or knowing when to pick things up and what, and at what price, and what makes sense or not. So it definitely takes time, but that's like, that's what it's all about, is like that skill set, that knowledge base of like, what are the trends, who are the designers that are worth picking up? Why, what is the quality? Like, you know, all that good stuff. And that's why, I mean, sometimes it can be hard, I think, in these like post pandemic times of like, I feel like I'm not like, you know, chronically online anymore. Like I'm not just on like, and I don't even have TikTok. So I'm like not hearing all of these like micro trends and phrases as soon as they're happening. So it's hard. So I wouldn't say I'm like ahead of the curve with some of these things, but it's more so like, I think if you can at least keep your ear to the ground and talk to people in the community, and see like what they're noticing and the phrases that they're noticing and things like that, you can still pick up enough in like a quick enough time frame to act on it and like have that be, you know, informing your decision making with like what you're picking up and selling in your shop.
Mm-hmm. I think with this whole conversation, the moral of the story is reselling's not going anywhere. It's growing, it's changing. The way that we maybe knew it to be before is not that way anymore. It's going to continue to grow and evolve. And the ones who are able to successfully make it to the other side, the ones that really take the time to open their eyes and kind of see what's going on, pay attention to what's happening on the platforms that they're on, network with other resellers who have a similar mindset as you so that you can learn from them and see what they're doing. You know, Jess is a part of our Patreon group, and every month we meet and, you know, we're always bouncing different things that we're trying or things that have been going on. And sometimes it's life that's getting in the way. It has nothing to do with selling, has nothing to do with what it is that you're putting into your storefront. It has everything to do with what's going on in your life. And I think sometimes you need to have that safe space to share that with other like-minded people, because they'll point it out to you and say, well, no, you're doing all the right things, but like you have a lot going on right now. And it's important. While this is a very lonely business to be in, right? It's hard to find that group of people that you feel comfortable with. They are out there. You just got to put yourself out there a little bit. And there's lots of groups that exist in the reselling space that you can join to talk to. And it's helpful. It's helpful to have a small community of people. And then you find people that you mesh with a little bit more than others, and you kind of stick to them and you have conversations outside of the group setting and everything. And I think in something like reselling, where you are doing everything by yourself for the most part, it's important to have a community that you feel like you can go to just vent.
Yeah, totally. And I think like, you know, it's easy to, well, not easy, but I think like a lot of people probably feel the pressure to be like, yeah, sales are great. Like I can only join this call if I have good sales to talk about and my numbers are strong and whatever. And so like, you know, I know like, I feel like Sonia mentioned, like, oh, I just was feeling down. Like, I didn't want to join the call. So I didn't. And it's like, no, you should definitely still join the call. Like, that's what, like, we're just chit chatting. We're just talking about the good and the bad. And like, that's really helpful. Like, just, I don't know. I think it's so important to keep reselling fun, because it's a very labor intensive, like, you know, business model. It's not like the most scalable, like, business model out there. I don't really do it for the money. I do it for like, because I think it's really fun and I do make some money from it. But like, I also like, I think it's so important to make sure that this stays fun. Because otherwise, like, it's just like, there's other ways to make money, you know, like if you really wanted to make like more money faster, like there's probably other ways to go about it or other things you can even be selling, right? You know, like I could start selling like industrial parts and car parts, and it's like
awful,
and probably make a better profit margin. And I don't want to do that, and I don't know how to do that, and that's not my skill set, and that's not exciting to me. And some people do really well with that, and that's awesome, but I don't want to do that. And like, I, you know, so like, I like selling what I sell, but like, it's so important to like make sure that all of this stays fun and interesting, and like is a challenge that I want to keep in my life, because like, you know, our products, like our inventory takes up space, the shipping supplies take up space. it's a lot of time on top of like everything else in life. You know, taxes are not fun for this. Everyone is stressed when it comes to filing taxes. So like, it's not like, I don't know, like, I just think it's not the only option if you're really, if you're looking for ways to make money. So it's really like fun. Like, it's really important to like, keep it good, keep it like positive. And you're allowed to like have bad sales days and bad sales months. And that's normal. And I think as long as you want to be thinking about and acting on ways to improve or like what to try differently, that's the key, is just to keep experimenting and like talk to people and keep it going. That's like, you know, just like don't give up with it.
And before we wrap up, I want to make just a quick note on trends. Trends come and go, but there are always certain pieces and certain styles that will forever be something that people search for. So just because, you know, we have a trend episode or another person has a trend episode and said, this is what's trending for right now. For these next 3 months, this is what's trending. It's not, the Bible is not gospel. It's not like it's not the law. It's not a policy. It varies. I mean, yes, there are things that people are going to be searching for because they saw it on an XYZ platform or they saw it on the runway or whatever. But there are some tried and true trends that will forever stay in people's hearts because they like that era. They like that time in fashion. There's people that will only wear pinup style dresses because it resonates with them. And there's like a whole community of that's all that they wear. And they love that time period. There are people that will only wear, I mean, like 70s style flare leg jeans and pants and the whole get-ups from the 70s. Like, everyone is so diverse and unique. And then you have people that will mix and match all these different trends and create these amazing outfits that you would never even think about. And it's a part of their creativity and it gives them a space to express themselves. So yes, while some things will be trending more than others, I guess it speaks more to clothing than anything else. Fashion and clothing are cyclical and they constantly change, but they always come back. Like, no matter what, something always comes back. It may come back in a different iteration, but I feel like we live in a world today because of the pandemic where everyone kind of just was in loungewear 24/7. People, when they started coming out, now they're like, well, I want to dress however I want to dress. I want to dress what makes me happy. I want to wear these bright colors. I want to emulate, you know, what they used to wear in the 50s because that really speaks to me. Or I love the way that these movies represent a certain time period. And like Yellowstone, for example, has had a heavy influence in Western making a big comeback in the fashion space. Mm-hmm. Same with like Bridgerton, right? With that Regency core and all of that, it has big influence. So you have all these shows that we all binge watch, and they influence the way that we may create fashion for ourselves. So yes, there will always be things that will trend and change over time in clothing and in shoes and accessories, but it always comes back.
Yeah. And I also think, like, just think about what's flattering too. Like, yes, at the end of the day, like, I think about what is going to be flattering on me. Mm-hmm. And I can't really wear trends because I'm a tiny person. I'm 4'9". And I have to stick with what is going to be flattering on me. And so I also think, like, yeah, like, speaking of like what's timeless, it's like, yeah, like, you know, probably a wrap dress is always going to be flattering on a woman's figure, or, you know, some of things like that, where it's just like, think about what is like a tried and true best practice for, you know, flattering different types of figures. And, you know, you just can't go wrong with that kind of thing. And then like the quality of the materials and the construction, like, it's just so, especially for vintage, like, the quality is everything.
It is. And vintage clothing, I think the reason why it's become so popular is, yes, it's cool to have these pieces from those time periods, but you cannot find that same quality at the price point that you're getting at it today. Like, it just doesn't exist. You're not going to be able to get that pencil skirt from the, I don't know, 50s or 60s that a woman was wearing to the office when women started going into the office, right? That 50s, 60s time, of that same quality and construction made by hand by a woman in a union, right? Like, that's where those came from. No, you're getting a mass-produced piece from a big box retailer. And yeah, it may look the same, but it is not the same quality. And I think that's where you have the two different buyers. You have the buyer that really wants the quality and wants the history related to that piece. And then you've got people who are like, well, I don't care. I just want a piece that looks like it. And I'm going to get rid of it anyway, because I'm just kind of getting it because it fits with what people are wearing right now. But there's something very special about finding those pieces that have that history behind it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, I don't know, I feel like part of that comes with age sometimes of like, you know, a lot of us probably started as fast fashion buyers and have come to the realization of what that actually means and like what else is actually out there and the possibilities of what is else is out there and the quality that you can get and the history and how cool that is. So I think sometimes it just comes with like time and being in a stage of life where, okay, yeah, I do have more disposable income than I can put towards, you know, higher quality pieces. But like, also, if you look at, like, if you actually break it down, you're probably actually saving a lot of money on by buying secondhand quality pieces and buying vintage. Like, that's still less than getting like a wool coat at new in the mall, you know, like, it's just it's so crazy. The prices these days, it's just so crazy. So
life in general right now is crazy.
I know. Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. This was fun. Thank you so much, Jess, for putting this together and chatting about it, because I think it is an important conversation to have as a community and just as two people sitting down who like the same things, right? And just bouncing it out there that there's so many factors and it can be discouraging. But I think if we look at the whole picture together and just really formulate a better idea of the landscape that exists now and how we kind of can fit our way through and make it work for us is really important, because we do love what we do and we love the hunt and we love to provide these pieces, whether it's home goods, clothing, doesn't matter, to others out there across the world. It doesn't have to be just in the US. It could be across the world. And what a cool thing that we can do. And it has its ups and downs. And I think a lot of people are experiencing downs right now, but we just have to find ways to stick it out and be creative, whatever that means to you, and just keep finding those unique things out there to save them.
Totally. Totally agree.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us this episode. I'll be back next week. We are going to do a fashion deep dive with actually another Patreon member. And it is going to be on Western wear, which we have never done here before.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yes, it's going to be fun. I have no knowledge of that either, so I can't wait to learn about Western wear. And hopefully you guys will be excited about that as well. So we will be back next week. Bye.